on digital radio, on the app, on your smartphone, on X, YouTube, and Facebook. The Sportscast. World Cup coverage.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
The Sportscast, July 3rd, 2026. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all your channels, YouTube, Facebook, X, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any of your favorite podcast players, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. You can visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also, follow us on X and Instagram at the Sportscast One, and check out our app, the Sportscast for iOS. The U.S. beats Bosnia in the round of 32, 2-0, but we have a red card from following Balogun, controversial, and of course, we'll talk about the Croatia-Portugal game, crazy game, and join us all the way from a hot Maine, Northeast, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks, Santi. Always a pleasure to be here. It is very warm here, 95 yesterday, but you're used to that.
Exactly. Now, Hal, let me ask you this. For Maine residents, It's usually cold all year. Do you guys have ACs? I know in England they don't, a lot of places, but in Maine, is that common to have ACs?
Yeah, most modern houses are built with central air. I don't live in one of those houses, but it gets hot here in July and August, and we use some window units, you know, and make the best of things, but it is getting hotter, and fall is extending into November and December longer. So yeah, things are different now.
Nice. Well, let's start with the World Cup. USA men's national team beat Bosnia Herzegovina, the first World Cup knockout win since 2002, since Landon Donovan days. A goal by Balogun in the 45th minute, and then Tillman at the 82nd minute, amazing free goal kick. Your thoughts over this game?
Well, a lot has sort of gone down since that result was posted, but it does obscure the fact that this was a really fine win against a gritty opponent. And I don't think I've seen a team at this tournament play better 10-11 than the U.S. did the last half hour when I was on pins and needles. I have to admit, I was not happy about the call. And I could have seen a tying goal just from pure pressure and them having to play 10 men against 11 for another half an hour, you know, in extra time. So I thought it was a really incredible performance. Our back three has played so well. It was supposed to be our weakness. It has turned out to be a strength. And when we assess, you know, Belgium in, you know, on Sunday or Monday, rather, you know, you can't help but think back to the game they played against Belgium back in March when our back four, it was a back four then, were terrible and just got schooled by Doku and several other Belgians. And I don't think that they think about the U.S. in the same way right today. And I don't think the United States thinks about itself the same way as they did back in March. It was a very accomplished and mature performance from the U.S. Pretty much all the way around.
Yeah, that game was in March. We'll definitely get into that preview a little bit later. Let's go with that the situation with Balogun, who scored which proved to be the decisive goal for the U.S. just before halftime, but was sent off after the hour mark in a controversial decision that will see him suspended for the round of 16 game against Belgium. The red card came after Balogun collided with Bosnian defender Tariq Mrmović just inside the U.S. attacking third. Both players were on the ground initially, but then referee Rafael Claus of Brazil was called to the monitor by the video assistant referee VAR and gave him a red card. Very controversial, of course. Balogun did not see him. He just was trying to get the ball, and then he landed on his player's leg.
Your thoughts? It's really interesting how VAR has evolved how the game has evolved in its use of the technology. This foul was called originally against number four, the Bosnian. And they went to look at it. And, you know, in slow motion, what Balogun did was clumsily step on the back of this guy's foot. Not intentionally. There was no intent or menace in it. It was just a coming together of the bodies, and he had to put his foot down someplace, and it ended up raking the back of this guy's foot. And look at the, when you look at it as a still photo, it looks terrible. And that is really, I think, what influenced the referee to make it a red. I couldn't believe that they were even considering it, because in real time, in the flow of the game, it was not a serious challenge. It was, if anything, clumsy. Now, look, in soccer, you are responsible for your body. And if you make a clumsy challenge, you can get thrown out, but more often they caution you after something like that. And that's what this situation called for. I haven't read or seen a single pundit, US supporting or otherwise, say that this was a warranted red card. It was really a shock. And you could almost see it in the referee's face when he came away from the TV. He was like, yeah, guys, I have to do this because I've seen it in slow motion and it looks really bad. And this is what I'm obliged to do. But I think it was the wrong call. I think the Clatterberg, who talks on TV for Fox, the former referee, agreed. Everyone has agreed. And the problem is that soccer is not played in slow motion. It's not officiated in slow motion. So VAR is encouraging us now to consider these fouls in slow motion. And that's not the intent. That's not the way it should be called. So look, into every life, a little rain must fall. And this was a big test. We passed the first test. We have another test on Monday and I'm feeling good about it, but we can talk more about, you know, Belgium, but you know, it was a crazy situation. Wasn't particular to our team. It just happened. And now we have to roll with it.
Yeah, we got to roll with it. We'll talk about who will be starting for him, the Balogun. The goal after the goal, I mean, after that red card came, Malik Tillman, we thought would be over, but Malik Tillman scored an amazing free kick, only in the, I believe it's the number two free kick of goal of the World Cup, Hal. And it was, came in the 82nd minute. It had a curve over the wall and into the net. Here's an image of it, obviously, and the goalkeeper couldn't reach it. Your thoughts, Tillman? Wow, what a goal.
It was incredible, and as a former player, I can tell you it wasn't a curve. That's when you put the where you blow the ball up, you know, the little that little piece of rubber, you point that toward you, and you hit an instep volley, not really hard, but just hard enough to get it over the wall, and then it starts dancing. You have no idea what it's going to do. Ronaldo takes free kicks this way, and Tillman just hit one to perfection. You could tell he didn't strike it that hard. But if you get that thing over the wall, it could sail over the crossbar. It could go straight down, which is what this one did. And boy, talk about the perfect response to that situation. I thought he knew what was going to happen. He had obviously, he was ready to take this goal kick, this free kick from that point. You know, he just looked like he was confident. And I applaud him. It was such an amazing, you know, way to end that game. It just took all the pressure away from the situation up until that point. You know, any mishap in the back, any kind of moment of brilliance from BH would have tied this game. And then things look really bad because how do you score a 10 men against 11? It's just very difficult. And they were already exhausted, both sides. Is again, just a very mature half hour that the U.S. was forced to undergo and came through it with flying colors, and Tillman's was the cherry on top. What a strike.
What a strike. That sealed the game, 2-0. A game that I wasn't too worried about. You weren't too worried about either. It was a team that was a winnable game. But now we got a big game, which House talked about a little bit already. Belgium, we played them in March. We did not win. We lost against them like about 3-1, I believe. This match is going to be played in Seattle, which we do well in Seattle. We have good supporter base. What are your thoughts over this match? And obviously, you know, who's going to fill that role for Fallon Balogun will be Ricardo Pepi. But how do you see this matchup?
Well, I don't know that it will be Pepi. I want it to be Pepi. Unfortunately, while Pepi, I thought, has come on and looked really good in every game during the buildup to this World Cup and at the World Cup. The very last game that he played, he got the start against Turkey. He looked terrible. He ended up sort of matched up with a very physical, big center back, a Turk whose name escapes me right now. But he sort of dominated Pepe, and he made him look small and weak. And that is not his game. He's rangy. He's 6'1 or 2. He's great in the air and can really run. So I hope that they play him next to Pulisic in the starting lineup against Belgium. But Pochettino does not play by the rules, and he asks his players to do things that they are asked to do at their clubs all the time, i.e. Step into a new alignment when he played four in the back against Turkey. Greg Berhalter would never have done that. He had one way to play. Everyone fit into that system. Pochettino could do some very interesting things here. He might play Tillman and Reyna together if he wants possession. If he can still get Pulisic next to Pepe up at the top of that thing, up at the top of the attack, and still and get the possession of having maybe Tillman playing out in a striker role, but playing centrally with Reyna, then they can defend with more numbers and let Dest overlap and leave it to Pepe and Pulisic up front. And, you know, they could play Haji Wright. You just don't know with this guy.
I was going to ask you, what are the probability for Wright to start?
I don't know. I mean, he hasn't shown an interest in playing Haji Wright, and he hasn't shown an interest in playing Timmy Weah, and I don't expect to see him either. He would be an option normally because he is a striker by trade. He actually plays the same position as Dest does for his club, you know, which is right wing back. But he was terrible against Turkey. So I don't expect to see him. Haji didn't even get a sniff in that game. I don't know why. Everyone else did. Why didn't Max Arfstrom play? He has impressed every time I've seen him. And I know he's young. But why not throw him on to play left back and see if he's going to be too jittery to play in a game that matters? I'm really excited to see it because I don't know what Poch is going to do. That is bad news for me and you, Santi, but really good, really bad news for Belgium. How do they prepare is the question. They have no idea what we're going to do. So I like it, and Poch is doing the right thing by keeping it close to his vest. He's got three or four options. I detailed three of them. There's probably several I have not considered because, you know what, I'm not running a team at the World Cup. But I love the idea of maybe he's hinted at playing Reyna and Tillman together, where Tillman, who can run a bit better, is a little wider. But that gives you possession in a way that we don't really have, at the top of our diamond midfield. So we'll see. It should be very interesting.
And with Belgium, they're coming off a interesting win. They were down 2-0 against Senegal until the 85th minute. They tied it up and on the game through extra time, actually. So quite something. Is that momentum for Belgium? Is that a good thing? Or are you saying, hey, they barely won this game?
No, they barely won it, but they are definitely better suited now to go forward.
Right.
Lukaku has hardly played in this tournament, and they were nowhere until they threw him on, I think, in the 75th minute. And once they had that focal point to the attack, they were better. And he nicked a goal that was not any great thing of beauty, but he's a big body, and he plays with his back to goal and is a great distributor of the ball, and he can turn you, and he flicked the ball past the keeper, and all of a sudden they were energized, and boom, then they tied it. I mean, it was shocking, and I'm sure they shocked themselves, and the poor Senegalese were just completely blown, you know, out of the water by this development. They've given up some bad goals late in games, as we saw in the African Nations Cup, and as we saw here. So, look, I think they're on a high. I think that they are happy to be playing us because they destroyed us in March 5-2, and we scored first late in the first half. They scored four unanswered goals. Jeremy Doku just destroyed us down the right wing, which is where Anthony Robinson and Tim Ream are playing, and they're playing together because everyone's worried about Ream having to play a very quick winger, just like Jeremy Doku. So Ream was terrible in March, had a handball that yielded a goal. So they can't be upset about their draw with us, but I think they recognize that this is a different group of players. We didn't have everybody for that game, but I mean, even if we did, I mean, they're just playing completely different soccer than they were pretty much until the tournament started.
Yeah, and one observation, Matt Fries will be starting as goalkeeper rather than Matt Turner from that game. So we'll see. It makes a little bit of a of a good probability for us to win. We'll see what happens. Anyways, let's go back.
That was not Turner's fault that they gave up all the goal. He was hung out to dry three or four times. One was a penalty. One was, you know, a ball that someone just left on the penalty spot for Onana to come in and smack in. I think it was the second goal. It was a shit show in the back, and it wasn't Turner's fault. But yeah, Freeze should start. He's the keeper of record until further notice, until something goes terribly wrong. And you know what? At a tournament like this, it usually does with a young keeper. Let's hope it happens in the next round.
Yeah, quite something. We'll look forward to Monday, 8 p.m. Yeah. So the games are still at night. So we'll see how it goes. Plenty of time to get from work to watch the game. Let's go to the other one last night. Hal was pretty excited about this one. Portugal eliminates Croatia at World Cup after dramatic late VAR card. The score was 2-1. Goal by Perisic. They scored first, Croatia. And then Ronaldo scored. They equalized at the 68th minute. And then they took him out and put in Ramos in and scored the winning goal. But then after that, Croatia had a controversial VAR call that they scored, but then it was called out VAR because of an offside position situation. Hal, your thoughts over this great game? Might be one of the best games.
It was top three games I've seen at the tournament so far, and that's saying something. I thought Croatia was so brave and so good in this game, and Modric, who's 40 years old himself, played the whole time, the whole game in midfield. He's been playing an hour here, an hour there. He goes off. He's gone off in every game until this one, and he was epic. So there's that side of it. Croatia, just the longer the game goes, the better they get, and the harder they become to play. And that's not true of Portugal. They were actually not good over the first hour of this game. And I got to say, and I've written this, people should know that I've been doing a every other day World Cup Digest on my Threads account. And I just posted something today, and I'm going to pair it a little bit, is that Ronaldo is holding this team back. And I think everybody knows it. The players know it. You could tell the coach knows it. He played the first hour and was absolutely worthless, did nothing, no link-up play, no pressing, of course, because he's 40 and you can't do that when you're 40. He scored a goal that was offsides. That was literally the only thing that he did in an hour. But Martinez, the coach, subbed on four guys at once at the hour to change the game. They needed to change the game. Ronaldo doesn't come off. It was almost a diversion because he did come off, you know, at 80 minutes to bring, you know, for a midfielder, because it took the coach five subs to put the team right after, you know, he, you know, started, you know, this worthless number nine that everything went through. They passed to him out of, you know, respect and deference. That, you know, he's making it very hard for them to win games. And I think this game was a really good example of that. Now, of course, he scored a penalty. They have a lot of people who can score penalties. And the guy that essentially took his spot, Ramos, scores the winning goal. This guy is not some mug. He plays for PSG, for Christ's sake. I mean, let the guy play. If Ronaldo was such a great sportsman, he'd be coming out today and saying, you know what? I think the coach should start Gonzalo. And, you know, I will come on, you know, because I think Ronaldo could be a pretty good weapon off the bench for a half an hour if they need a goal. But he cripples them when he has to play 60 minutes, and because he just doesn't do what most strikers can do. He can do one or two things really well, but they can't win this tournament with him starting. And they're going to get destroyed by Spain unless they do something different.
I've been saying that for a while, Hal, ever since the beginning of the tournament. So yeah. We'll see. I don't know if Martinez taking him out might be a preview of what could happen in the starting lineup. We'll find out. But Spain and Portugal should be a good matchup. So we'll
see. Off the charts. What a matchup in the round of 16. Incredible.
Which give us a segue to this segment. Mike Arias Ball fired Spain past Austria to World Cup last 16. It was just a 2-0. Really, I think I saw the best of Spain from this matchup. I'm not sure if you saw the same thing, but
I guess I did, but Austria was bad. Yeah. You know, we've said there that I think we talked last week about how the expanded tournament really hasn't diluted the competition. Austria didn't look like they were deserving of a place in the knockout rounds. They were they never threatened the Spanish goal and gave up three goals, could have given up a lot more. This dude, Oyarzabal, and I think it is Oyarzabal, like the Castilian Z.
plays your guess as good as mine.
Yes. He plays, I believe, for Real Sociedad.
Yeah.
And he is not a star. Obviously, he plays for the national team. He's very, very good. But all you hear about is Lamine Yamal and Javi and all these. They have so many stars.
Nico Williams.
Yes. This all he has to score. I think he has 16 goals and 17 international appearances. Hello. The guy has the nose, and he puts the ball away. He scored twice, and they were nothing spectacular to watch. He was where he should have been, and he slotted him home. Didn't even use his instep. So, look, Spain is really, really good. Everyone says that France is unbeatable. Spain can beat France. Argentina can beat France. I think Brazil, if given the right conditions, can beat France. A lot of teams can beat France. That doesn't mean they will. But Spain would love a piece of France. I think they're probably tired of hearing how good France is.
And Spain, I think they have a winning streak against France. I believe there's 6-0 against them.
That's news to me. I don't know. What's interesting is, you know, I've written this book about the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, and I argue in it a lot about what a great rivalry it is, and it is. It's the most complicated one in world football. But Spain and Portugal is fascinating. They don't play each other unless they have to. They've played like remarkably few friendlies over the course of a century because they, the saying in Iberia is that these are two nations who live back to back. They don't want anything to do with each other. The idea of, you know, like the League Cup sharing a league, you know, to make something, they're like, no, we're not doing that. They want nothing to do with each other. They scorn each other. And I can't wait to watch that match. They did play in the Nations League final.
Yeah.
A year ago? And I think Portugal won on penalties.
Oh, wow. I remember that. Yeah.
I think it ended 2-2 and Portugal won on penalties. And, you know, that's just a Nations League final, but that's a game people want to win. And I'm fascinated by that matchup, I believe. Doesn't that match take place the same day as the U.S. Belgium match?
It does. July 6th, Monday.
What a fun day of soccer that will prove to be.
3 p.m. So right before the USA Belgium, hopefully end on time so I can run over to see the USA Belgium game. I'm sure.
I have to say, I really wanted to get out to the bars and watch some of these games, and I watched the Bosnia game in a bar, and it was great.
Right.
But you know what? when the shit goes down, and when there's some VAR thing, and the same thing happened with me when that offside was called against our. When the goalkeeper was ahead of the ball, it was the Morocco game. Right. I didn't know what was happening. It took me, you know, I had to get home or get on my phone and read about what was going on. It is confusing sometimes in a bar when you don't have people telling you what the hell is going on with VAR. So, yeah, it's another downside to this technology. But everyone should still go out to bars and watch soccer live.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of the fun. VAR is a big part factor in these games. Last night, Hal stood up late. I did not. Switzerland beat Algeria 2-0. Goal by Brill Embolo and Danny Nobe. Switzerland cruised through Algeria and will face the winner of Colombia and Ghana. Any thoughts on Switzerland, or did you see the match?
I did. I watched it this morning on tape. I'm not going to lie. Nice. It was too late for me. But, yeah, Switzerland is just a very quiet and unassuming, excellent team. I think we spoke last week about how weird it was that against Austria, Algeria scored that goal that would have sent them. I think it would have sent them to play another team. But anyway, you don't want to play Switzerland. They're very, very good. They ended up getting Switzerland anyway, and they were completely outclassed. Algeria has capability, but maybe there's a ceiling for all these African teams that are qualifying. We're going to find out more tonight when Ghana plays Colombia. Ghana is a tough team to play against.
They got a lot of stars, a lot of Premier League players, so we'll definitely talk about that. All right, let's go into predictions because I do want to squeeze in some NBA.
Sure.
A lot of moves this week. Australia versus Egypt in Dallas today. It is the first game up, actually. Who you got?
Wow. I don't think Egypt is that good. I think Australia steals this game. 1-0.
1-0
or 1-0 or 1-1 on penalties.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm taking Australia.
Australia. Interesting. The boys down under. Argentina versus Cape Verde, another African team in Miami. What's going to happen there?
I got to take Argentina. That'd be foolish not to. but we were just talking off air that Argentina just hasn't played anybody yet. We really don't know how good they are. I mean, they've got Messi. How bad could they be? But this is not a game that will test them. I think your Colombians are the ones who are going to have to do it.
Yeah, if Argentina wins this, we'll face the Australia-Egypt game.
Again, neither of those teams are going to trouble Argentina. What a draw. But, you know, that game was supposed to be Belgium. Belgium was supposed to win that group. So it's a little different, but Argentina's loving it.
Now the U.S. has to face Belgium. Anyways, and late tonight, Ghana versus Colombia. This might be the first real test for Colombia.
I like Colombia in this game. I think they're able to run at people and score, and Ghana won't be able to frustrate them. But I think that Colombia will be scored upon. 2-1, Colombia.
Colombia, there you have it. Okay, NBA news. You're Jaylen Brown from the Celtics is traded to the 76ers. I want to touch on that with you. How your thoughts are with that? Obviously, Brown has been – the Celtics have flirted to trade Brown for a while, even in 2022. Now they did it again with Giannis. Didn't work out, but now it did work out for Philadelphia. Your thoughts over this?
Well, nobody in Boston or New England understands what's going on. I think that on a surface level – it's clear that Jaylen Brown didn't like it when he was dangled in the trade offer for Giannis. I can understand that. But apparently it was more than he cared to put up with. And I think he may have come back to them and said, you should just trade me. And that happens. I'm on Team Jaylen here. I think that he had a right to be annoyed, but they're getting paid a lot of money. They can put up with a few shots to their ego. What I don't understand is this trade, because – if you're going to trade Jaylen Brown, take your time. Find out what you can get. I just don't believe that the value for Jaylen Brown is Paul George and a couple of picks. Paul George is 35 years old, and this team is in your division. It seemed really quick. I mean, the Giannis trade only happened a week before, and they had this lined up, and no one came and overwhelmed them with stuff. Paul George and some picks. You got to be kidding me. So I don't get it. There must be something else going on here that we don't know yet. It could be related to Jaylen's. I think he had an option to extend for, you know, a lot of money, close to $300 million, I believe. And maybe the new owners and their private equity backers don't want to do that. I don't know. But it's a terrible answer. Pardon me, but we don't know what's going down here, because I don't think we've been told the truth, and it's going to take a while for that to come out. But I know the one thing is that the Celtics aren't going to be as good as they were this year. They're not going to be as good as they were in 2024 when they won it all. They are not in decline, but
mid-table team.
I think they could win 50 games, but I don't think that they're going to be as good as the Knicks. I don't know that they are going to be as good as the Sixers, especially if they get LeBron. That's fun. That's another thing. If the Sixers have the money and the resources to get LeBron, how come we couldn't get some of those resources in trading Jaylen Brown, who's two decades younger than LeBron? It just doesn't make any sense to me right now. Something is going on that we're not being told about.
Exactly. Before I get to LeBron, we think about Mitchell Robinson, the Celtics. Is that something that you like, or it's not? It's like whatever.
I thought that was a good move. I thought that with Keita and Mitchell Robinson, they have two guys who can defend and protect the rim, which they haven't always had. Keita, I thought is a really had a great season, and he's a young player. He's getting better and better. Mitchell Robinson means that we don't bring Luka Garza off the bench. He can't protect the rim, and Mitchell Robinson can, as we've seen. He's a first rate defensive center, and it's going to make us a better team. And those two together, you know, as long as you have scoring at both forward positions, you can get by with not having a scorer at center. But you know what? We just traded one of our scoring forwards, and now I'm not sure who's going to put the ball in the net. And I don't know, maybe I have a friend who loves Brad Stevens, and so do I. We think he's one of the smartest guys in the league. And it surprises me that this went down and this is what he wanted. But I wouldn't be surprised if he has another option here that we're just, you know, we've not considered. We don't know everything yet.
True. It's not over yet, so we'll find out more. And then we touched on LeBron. Where do you think he's going? Obviously, we've been hearing Philadelphia. We've been hearing Golden State, Cleveland, Miami. I think Miami's not in that list anymore, but your thoughts over LeBron's next move?
Well, he's going to a team that's good. And I don't know how good the Warriors are. They're obviously really old. And it would be a high-profile, fun thing. He's got a year left, maybe, and he wants to go someplace where he can maybe win. Are the Sixers good enough to win? I don't think so. But, geez, with Jalen Brown, and if Embiid plays, you know, 50 games and saves himself for the playoffs, I have
Tyrese
no
Maxey? Oof.
I know they have a great backcourt. I still don't understand why Philadelphia got rid of the dude who went to the Thunder, the guy who played at Duke. And right. He was the third guard in Philly. And why am I blanking on his name? Because I wasn't prepared to talk basketball. But they got nothing for him. So Philly is in a better position than they've been in a long time. And it may be to the detriment of the Celtics, which doesn't make me happy.
Interesting. Well, NBA is definitely getting spicing up. I mean, at least in the East, is spicing up a little bit. So we'll find out. Giannis to Miami. Of course, they're trying to get some players to try to fill that roster. But anyways, World Cup continues the coverage. Hal, what is the best way to reach you online and talk about your book?
Sibling Rivalry, Hal Phillips. That's my handle at Threads and Instagram. And like I said, come and check out the World Cup Digest. I'm posting all sorts of content and excerpts and stuff. But this stuff's about the tournament, and you're not going to get it anywhere else. The book is about the U.S.-Mexico rivalry and what an amazing, complicated, flesh-eating, freak-out rivalry it is. It's really got no equal in world football, and the book is about why that is so. And for the record, you know, one more round of Mexico and the U.S. Advancing, and we can start thinking about the possibility of a final. They can't beat until the final, but is Hal going to sell a lot of books if they do? So that's what we're rooting for.
We're rooting for that, which is possible. You never know these days in this World Cup. Anyways, you can get the link, the book, in the description. Get it on Amazon. It's a great book. I forgot to ask you, Mexico versus England. Do you think that might be an upset?
I think that Mexico has played way better than anyone had expected, especially in the back. They have not given up a goal. But the pressure is on Mexico here because they are expected to win at home. They are expected to entertain and play attacking, skilled, stylish football at home. They're capable of locking it down and getting a result. But if they try to do that against England, they'll get booed off the pitch. So I think that an open game does not favor Mexico. I think that them going at the English the way Croatia went at England will not work out for Mexico. So we'll see how much discipline they have and how much sway the coach Aguirre has with his players. I think they will do what is asked of them, but if he says we're going to park the bus and play on the counter, they're not going to like it, and the fans will like it even less. So yeah, I'm fast happens because that's a marquee matchup, and what a double bill.
That'd be quite something. Anyways,
That's on Sunday night.
Yeah. Wow. You know your schedule, Hal.
It's unbelievable. There's fewer and fewer teams. It's like there's less to track now. So what's the other game on Sunday?
Sunday. Let me tell you. Sunday. Brazil. Norway. Ooh,
hello.
That one.
Yeah.
No one's talking about that game.
I have to tell you, I laid some money on Haaland scoring two goals against the Ivory Coast, and did not go the way I wanted. He scored one, but not two. So I think that's the end of my betting in the World Cup. I took a swing and it's over.
We'll see. I don't know. I can see Norway beating Brazil, and I can see Brazil still beating Norway. It's a 50-50 game. But we'll find out, because Brazil's without Paquetá, Hal. So
Is he hurt or is he just not playing?
He's hurt, and I think he might be out for the rest of the tournament. So
well, they're a weird team. They're good in the back, and they're good going forward. Their midfield is very ordinary. Paquetá is one of them. Bruno Guimarães, you know, with Newcastle. He's okay. Right. They don't have that really creative, dominant midfielder they usually have. Right. So maybe they're better off with a drone there next to Casemiro to lock it down, and maybe they'll do better. But what a weird team with the basically, you know, three midfielders, and one of them, Casemiro, is very defensive. Of course, he scored a goal the other day. They can score goals, and when they put Eldrick on, or Endrick, all of Brazil was very happy. Apparently, they're all those memes.
And, And they might put him as a midfielder because like their midfield's thin right now without Paquetá. Rafinha's out as well. So,
well, Rafinha he's a striker, and so yeah. is Elder. But yeah, if you play them in a withdrawn way so that they are creating and facing the goal, I think that's smart because they've got people who can defend. And Casemiro is still in his dotage, a really capable destroyer.
Yeah,
he looks really fit too. He must be on the Ozempic, man. He is thin.
He's up to something. That's for sure. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on X and Instagram. We'll be live tweeting throughout the week. A lot of games. Look forward to it. A lot of people are getting involved watching the games. What's offside? What's VAR? Hey, we answered those questions as well. Anyways, Hal, thanks for coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi.
And that's what's your update.